My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh my goodness. Well, Alien, I mean, you don't even have to be a college football fan to really understand. When I turn him on, what you're looking at is different than everyone else on the field. It's just also, and then you talk about the more football-minded fan. Amy, this was supposed to be done. Like, we were supposed to be done with the two-way player era. It's more specialized. Now you play one side of the ball. And I remember I was actually down in Fort Lauderdale at CBS Sports HQ on signing day a few years ago when that news about Travis Hunter going to Colorado came out. All these recruits claim they're going to shock the world with their decision. He actually did shock the world with his decision. And then he goes there. People laughed at it. And then he said, I'm going to play both ways there. And people laughed at that. And now he's done it, and he's doing it all at like 165, 170 pounds, by the way, and is really physical for that size. You may be looking at the number one overall pick in the draft. You may be looking at a Heisman Trophy contender. Just unbelievable talent, and it's happening in Boulder, Colorado.
He ends up with 7 catches, 132 yards, 3 touchdowns as Colorado gets underway. Now, this time last year, we hadn't really understood what Deion Sanders was going to do in Colorado. Now, a year removed from that, the shine has gone off a little bit, Josh, but how would you describe his impact on his school, his conference, even college football?
They had a graphic on the broadcast tonight I was watching that just showed the economic impact alone in Boulder. This is before you get to wins and losses. It showed the, I think, 51% increase in African-American application to the University of Colorado. It showed the merchandising sales, the social stuff. So it's been a tsunami of an impact academically, socially, culturally there. Now, people like us care about wins and losses, and so you zoom in a little bit more. I think the way that game went for them tonight, if people didn't see it, they ended up winning by 5. I think it went about as well as it could go for them because it was a real, like, hard-fought, down-to-the-end-of-the-wire football game. They had a couple of personal foul-type things in the first half that extended drives from North Dakota State. It kept drives alive for them, probably kept Colorado from being a double-digit winner. And I'm saying all this to say, last year was so much about hype and flash, and it was everything but football. This was a really good, like, you've heard of come to Jesus meetings. This was like a come to football meeting. It was like a, hey, all that stuff's fine, but to be like a legit contender in the Big 12, which is a conference that's totally misunderstood nationally, by the way, to be a contender there, you're going to get your tree shaken every week by programs that are rock solid culturally, bunch of fourth and fifth year starters, guys that aren't going to go on to play Sunday ball in most cases, but guys who shine on Saturdays. And so that test they got today is a microcosm of the ones they'll get all year, and it'll be the difference in winning 4 games versus 8 games.
How is the Big 12 misunderstood nationally?
Well, if you and I were to just walk out of your studio right now, find some folks in town that watch college football, ask them what they think about Big 12 football, and they'd say, not a lot of defense, high-flying, air raid all over the place, pinball. And that is not the Big 12 whatsoever anymore. It was a decade ago. And the Big 12 has always been a couple of steps ahead, honestly, of college football. They've had to be that way because they lack the top-end talent that lets you do whatever you want to do. In the SEC, you got, in Big Ten combined, you got half a dozen programs that really get to choose whichever way they want to do it, because they got the players to do it any which way they want to. In the Big 12, you're hamstrung by that. And so they are forced to innovate. They're forced to be ahead of the curve. Well, that used to mean, you know, Mike Leach out at Texas Tech doing all kind of crazy stuff and people stay up late to watch it. Well, the last 4 or 5 years, the Big 12 has been smash mouth, roll up your sleeves, really, really good defense. As a result, very unpredictable, a lot of variance and outcome type games. And, you know, Colorado steps into that, and they'll have a couple of players better than anyone in that conference, at least, and more young ones that will end up being that way. But it's not a conference full of football players. It's a conference full of teams. Really, really sound, well-constructed, high-culture, high-character teams. So you've got to be one of those to beat those kind of teams.
Right now, five of them in the preseason rankings, which don't mean a whole lot, but they are teams to watch. We've officially entered the era, at least for now, of the Power Four conferences. What does that mean to the average fan? Anything?
I'd say to the average fan, it means something, because we've gotten so used to saying Power Five, Power Four. I don't even look at college football that way right now, honestly. I look at it as a Power Two, and then the other two, we can call them whatever you want to, but I mean, they are not playing the same caliber and depth of football in the ACC and the Big 12, all due respect, as they are in the SEC and the Big 10. And then what's really happening too, past what we call the quote-unquote Power Four, and this is really where you get in the weeds and you got to stay up to date as a fan, what the transfer portal is doing to the top of the best G5 rosters is criminal, at least if you're a G5 fan. And what's happening is you've just got an exchange of talent, and the ones that aren't good enough at the Power Four level drop down, and the ones that are good enough elevate. And as a result, you don't have Boise States anymore. The school still exists, but those vintage programs like Cincinnati back in the day, Utah back in the day, UCF back in the day, those three have something in common. They all became Power Four programs. So when you think about the romanticism of what used to be a Cinderella story at the G5 level, those programs either elevated and joined the Power Conference, or their players are getting rated now. And one other thing that's happening that I swear to you is not being talked about a fraction as much as it should. The NCAA passed new coaching rules this past summer, and there was so much other stuff going on, people just didn't pay attention. You are unlimited now as to how many on-field coaches you can have, which means these power programs, Miami, Alabama, Ohio State, they're free to go take any amount of coaches they want to from the G5 and FCS ranks. And a bunch of them are coordinators at those levels, and they're just coming to be analysts at a place like Georgia. And the reason is because you'll make more money there, but also you crossed that great divide and you got yourself in the door of a major program. And so not only are the players leaving, the coaches are leaving, and as a result, the gap just grows further and further, have versus have not.
Josh Pate is with us, week one college football preview, and he's got the newly renamed Josh Pate's College Football Show, also with CBS Sports. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Josh, the last time we talked, you were helping me process the revelation that the top flight quarterbacks in college football are making $6, $7, $8 million. I recently had another revelation, and it really did send me down a bit of a rabbit hole. Why does a college football program need a general manager?
Oh, now, I could filibuster the rest of this show on this. So this is an interesting development now. People that have been, you know, sort of forward-thinking in this sport have been calling this for a little while. Right now, the college game mirrors the pro game much more than it ever has before. Amy, we're still at the very, very precipice of the revenue-sharing era. So this time next year, hopefully we talk again before then, but if it's this time next year, we will be talking about each of these schools having 20-some-odd million dollars in payroll from media rights deals that they are dividing up amongst their roster. Well, now I want you to think about this. How do you divide that money up? And how do you structure it where it's an advantage? Because you're going to have some desperate recruiting programs out there that go offer a ton of money to true freshmen. You're going to have programs that have their you-know-what together who understand that is not the way to build a sustainable program. You have to have a merit-based escalator-type earning system, just like you do in the real world, or you're supposed to have it. And what's happening right now with that combined with the transfer portal And I'm going to tell you, this is one of the big stories right now when I talk to coaches. Kirby Smart has Georgia as one of the top programs in the country. All right, he's not losing his starters. Kirby Smart is having his second-line guys gutted because a lot of desperate programs out there are willing to pay far above market value for Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State-style second-string players. And what's going to happen is Georgia plays Clemson this Saturday. Ohio State's got big games coming up. You watch some of these teams. Bama is a perfect case study as well. Watch some of these elite teams and watch them look incredible. But watch what one injury could disproportionately do more so than it used to. And then ask yourself, all right, how are they going to adjust in the future? And does a head coach really want to be the one that's worried about salary structure, which is basically what we're talking about now? The answer is no. These are football coaches.
Right.
They never signed up for this. You got to have these guys in the building. And I'll also tell you another thing that's happening. You've got people who never in a million years thought they would have a role in an athletic department, like in a college football program, getting jobs in college football now. I mean, someone who majored in business and finance is now really, really high up the totem pole in a lot of these football complexes, and they never would have been there 5 years ago.
And yet somehow with all of this and the wild, wild west and how crazy it is, how convoluted, you can still have a coach get nabbed for a recruiting violation. That cracks me up. Anything else goes, but somehow Kirk Ferentz ends up with a recruiting violation.
That's happening. And then we've got the Michigan stuff happening right now. We're in this transition period where I don't think we're too much further down the road from these conferences taking on the task of enforcement and the NCAA not even handling that anymore. I know people laugh at that and say, oh, these conferences could never be trusted to do that. Actually, if you get them all on board with agreeing to a governance structure, they'd be way more equipped to do it because those conferences control something the NCAA doesn't, and that is payout. I think that's going to happen. I also think with this whole Michigan thing floating around, you know, people are talking about what the NCAA could do. Will they drop the hammer on Michigan? Well, Amy, I'd ask you this. Do you think, in your right mind, with how much money is being paid by networks to acquire media rights deals to these conferences, do you think, in your right mind or anyone else's right mind, that those conferences are going to sit back and those networks are going to sit back and allow a completely and totally antiquated investigating body in Indianapolis, street named NCAA, do you really think they're going to let them come in and devalue one of their primary assets like Michigan? I'm not talking about going and fining Michigan. Of course you could do that. But taking scholarships away, delivering some postseason ban, that's 80s and 90s stuff. I don't think the NCAA has the teeth to do that even if they want to anymore.
At some point, as you talk about with the coaches, it's got to be a relief just to focus on football. To hear a Mike Gundy say, I finally had to tell my players, get your agents to stop calling me asking for more money. It's time to focus on football. I mean, it's so complicated these days.
And here's the ironic part. What Mike Gundy is saying is actually in the best interest of the player, because the thing that maximizes a player's value more than anything else is winning football games and playing at a high level, not by having your attention fragmented in August because some quasi-agent by, you know, label only told you, I think we can get $25,000 more out of the school if you just sit out practice today. That is so penny-wise, pound-foolish. But the problem, unlike pro sports, is you don't really have to be accredited to call yourself an agent in the college game right now, which is one of the other issues that really have to be addressed about that sport.
Josh Pate is with us after his show, which has got a brand new name. We're going to talk about that coming up, but still with CBS Sports, and we love to have him here with us after hours with Amy Lawrence. All right, Josh, let's actually talk about football because we've got some big matchups this weekend, week one. I love the idea that there's a quarterback for Georgia who has spent his entire career in one uniform. Doesn't happen nearly as much anymore. How do Carson Beck and the Georgia offense have success against that Clemson D this weekend?
I think they got probably one of, if not the best offensive lines in the country. It's a really good matchup. That Georgia offensive front against Clemson's defensive front will have a lot of NFL scouting types in the building there in Atlanta to watch that. I don't think people realize this because everyone thinks defense first with Georgia. They had a top five scoring offense in the country last year. Just goes to show you what Alabama was able to pull off beating them and keeping them out of the playoff, because Georgia would have been favored to win the whole thing had they gotten in. And so you fast forward another year, same quarterback, same coordinator, same head coach, a lot of consistency, continuity of most of that offensive line returns. They went and got a running back out of Florida who may or may not be suspended for this one, but over the long haul, ETN will be a really, really good tailback for him. But I just think in general, they have the best collection of pass catchers they've probably had there. And I'm going to tell you something else. That tight end room is really good, and that's a tight end room that just lost Brock Bowers. And people may look at that and say, well, you can't replace him. Well, maybe singularly you can, but in the aggregate, they've still got one of the three best tight end rooms in the country to me. And so I'm looking forward to it. I also think about the other side, Amy. I think about how Clemson is nearly a 2-touchdown underdog in this game.
Wow.
And some of our buddies over at 24/7 Sports, Cooper Pategna does a really good job on this. So I put out a study the other day on just tracking talent acquisition and who the most talented rosters in college football are. Georgia was number 2. Clemson's number 5. And you think about vintage Clemson and how rough they were to deal with. And now the gap is perceived to be 2 touchdowns on a neutral field. That's just, maybe it'll play out that way. But that is a proud program that still has some pretty good football players in their own right over there. I cannot wait to see that game. That's a noon kickoff Eastern time. That's one of the first ones we get out of the gate Saturday.
Right, right. And then one of the latest ones on the schedule in primetime is Notre Dame and Texas A&M, both of them ranked in the top 20. What are a couple of the keys that will go into determining that one?
Oh, line of scrimmage, not surprisingly. Notre Dame's in a tough spot here. They are going into the most underrated hostile environment in all of college football in Kyle Field, a night game. And what they're doing is, they're taking 6 combined starts, career starts on the offensive line into that environment. And people need to understand something. There's a new head coach at Texas A&M. This is not a typical rebuild job. Jimbo left, by our estimation, the 7th most talented roster in college football there. It was mismanaged at times. Jimbo was not a great CEO type. It was not a program that came close to maximizing its potential under Jimbo, but it wasn't because they didn't have the players. And so Mike Elko, he walked in the door at Duke a few years ago, had some underrated players there, and immediately won 2 years in a row. He didn't have to burn it down and start from scratch. He immediately won. He's walking into a place at Texas A&M that has insane multiple 5-star caliber depth up front defensively. He will go, they'll probably go against the youngest offensive line they face all year this Saturday night in Notre Dame. And so that's one side of it. But the other side is, Notre Dame's really salty defensively, too. That A&M offensive line's trying to find their way. That over-under win totals or point totals, 46.5, I think, right now. I've got trouble seeing it getting to even that. That one should be a really, really close game, decided fourth quarter. But hats off, man. I always say this in week one. Hats off to these teams who schedule these games in week one. I just watched Arkansas just splatter Arkansas Pine Bluff. And so I would much rather take this than that.
But the thing is, it can backfire, right? If you're Florida State, it blows up in your face.
It can. That's when people would tell you, well, that's why we have a 12-team playoff. But I was always of the opinion, and always have been of the opinion, in college football that I don't think strength of schedule is properly interpreted. Like, the biggest lie we tell about this sport is you are what your record says you are. In the NFL, that's true because everyone plays equal competition every week. Everyone plays a pro team every week. In college football, I'm looking at Liberty and Florida claiming to play the same sport this year. Liberty does not play a single Power 4 team. Florida plays, I think, 9 teams in the top 30. It's just not even the same galaxy of the same sport. So, like you mentioned Florida State there. Yeah, they went and got upset week one. Okay, mm-hmm. Florida State, had they played a directional school, would have won week one. They're the same team. Yeah, you should be punished for losing. I just think it should be interpreted a little bit differently. And then that goes into the whole debate about should we or should we not do preseason rankings. I don't have a problem with rankings. I just wish people would understand what their eyes are seeing when they're watching these games.
Just like the Patriots and no Bill Belichick, it's going to be odd to see someone else patrolling the sidelines other than Nick Saban. What changes with Kalen DeBoer?
I'm going to drop something on you that's probably going to raise some eyebrows. I think they upgraded their coaching staff defensively. which is just mind-boggling because Saban is a career defensive guy, one of the best to ever do it. Kalen DeBoer is an offensive guy. Here's what happened. I'm going to take you in the weeds for just a second. You probably know what I'm about to say. I'm not sure the audience does. In the coaching world, in college football, the way hiring happens is not the way people think it happens. People think these coaches have these Rolodexes full of names, and they've scouted all these coaches, and they have files on all of them. In reality, it's just what agent are you with? And then when you got an opening, they provide you with a list of 30 names under that same agency and pick which ones you want. That's the trade-off for being represented by the best in the game, Jimmy Sexton at CAA, chief among them. Mm-hmm. So even Nick Saban had become prone later in his career to some misses in the hiring world. Not to mention, it was tough for Saban to get his first choices in the latter portion of his career because retirement was rumored. And so as a result, Saban was still incredible at the end of his career. His staffs were just good and nothing more. So DeBoer came in and actually, I think, upgraded the personnel on his defensive coaching staff. And so in the aggregate, you probably improved the coaching staff there, which is just mind-boggling to say. The team that they're inheriting has the number one talent roster in the country right now. I don't think they have as good a depth as Ohio State and Georgia, but front-end talent, Bama will be as good as anyone in the country. So you just have to cross your fingers for injury luck there. But I just think about what DeBoer did with Michael Penix, and I think about what he could do with Jalen Milroe. They got another kid there named Ty Simpson if they need to test their quarterback depth that they also feel really good about. So Bama doesn't have an easy schedule this year either, but it's such an atypical situation. Normally when you take over a program, it's because the previous guy got fired. I don't know that I have ever seen a coach walk into a more blessed position than DeBoer, which flies in the face of conventional wisdom. Conventional wisdom is no one wants to take over for a legend. Well, that's a lie. No one wants to take over for the legend that let his program erode. I mean, with all due respect now, the end of legends' careers in this sport, whether it's Bryant at Alabama, whether it's Bowden down at Florida State, whether it's Paterno at Penn State, those programs are well past their vintage years by the end of those guys' careers. Saban was an overtime play away from making another national title game in the last year of his career. So the roster's ready-made to win. DeBoer is a one percenter, got full confidence in himself. I think the guy could compete for a national title this year.
I said the same thing. If you're walking into Alabama, you have everything you possibly need to succeed. You'd really have to try hard to screw it up. I'm on board there, too. I would expect Alabama to be right where it always has been under Nick Saban. All right, Josh, let's talk. Congratulations. You just re-signed a new deal to stay with CBS Sports, and now you get to own your show, which is called Josh Pate's College Football Show. What does that mean to you after all the years and the time and energy you've invested?
The world means the world. This is a very, very interesting era sort of in the media world in general. I mean, I was doing construction jobs and heating and air installation, worked in a fabric warehouse down in Columbus, Georgia, as recently as like 2011 or 2012. And all I did was I listened to sports talk radio all day. But I mean, you know, as well as I do, up until the mid-20-teens, there were just certain avenues to get in this business.
Right.
And if you didn't have access to them, you were not going to get in this business. And in my estimation, overhead and distribution were sort of the Berlin walls that fell in the mid-20-teens. What I mean by that is up until that point, to have your voice heard nationally or globally, you had to have massive distribution power at your potential. And only a few networks held that power. And then the overhead, the fancy studios you needed access to, the equipment you needed access to, very few people held the keys to those. Then, in the mid-20-teens, when platforms like YouTube, Facebook, etc., added the live broadcast mechanism to their platform, total game changer. All of a sudden, anyone theoretically has a path. And so that's when we started, you know, the show that you see now, and that's a long, long story there. But to look 10 years later, I say this as humbly as I possibly can, but we've got our show positioned as the most watched college football show in all of digital media. That includes everybody. What it tells me is there wasn't always an audience for it. There was always a hunger for maybe something other than what was being offered. And I feel like blessed enough to be surrounded by the right people, but also to have come along in a time where that was afforded to me, because I could have the same hopes and dreams as I do now in 1993. But, you know, being in the position I was in with without the proper college degree at the time, without any kind of family relationship or connection, I would have never gotten this shot. So it's a very, very fortuitous sort of intersection of passion and opportunity.
I know you like to get out and interact with the peeps. What are a couple of road trips that people should know?
Well, I know that I will be in Gainesville, Florida this Saturday for that Miami-Florida game.
Nice.
Think about this now. You want to talk dream job if you love college football. So what we get to do is pick the game we want to go to and just stand on the sideline for it. And then we come back home Sunday. We let the dust settle. We assess the landscape. We pick the next week's game. We build up to it all week. Then we go to that game. Rinse, repeat. I've got some games I'm looking at, like Texas at Michigan is week two. I think there's a strong chance we'll be there.
Nice.
Think about Ohio State going to Oregon as a conference game this year. That's insane. Think about Georgia going into Alabama. Think about the fact that on that same day that Ohio State goes to Oregon, we've got Penn State at USC. We've got Oklahoma versus Texas. We've got Ole Miss at LSU. It's October 12th is the monster Saturday in college football this year, and it's the kind of thing where you can't make a wrong decision. There's no wrong place to be, but those road trips in the fall, it's taxing just from like a time and energy perspective, but
yes,
I look forward to it all year. It's amazing.
One of the ways that you interact with fans is by giving away gas. Am I getting that correct?
See, okay. This has been real fun. Okay, this right here is the most fun thing I think that we've been able to do with the show. So in our world, in the media world, normally there is an ad sales department that's dealing with third-party agencies that connect you with the brands, and you've got big upfronts in the media world, and that's how ad sales happen. I've never wanted it to be that way. I've always wanted a relationship with my partners. And so we recruited them ourselves, and it turns out they all watched the show. So like Academy Sports and Outdoors, we brought on board ourselves. We brought in FanDuel ourselves, and most recently, I mean, I took the entire spring and summer, and I just flat out said, I'm on the road all the time. It makes perfect sense to be partnered with a gas station. Submit your bids, people. And we did. We had like seven of them that came forward and met with all of them, and we just treated it like a college football recruitment. I had a hat ceremony. You realize I put on a Quick Trip hat right there on live TV. But, I mean, they're so awesome because they're so interactive, and they think about this now. Instead of putting a sheet of ad copy in front of you for a 30-second or 60-second ad read, they just say, yeah, we trust you. Just, you know, do whatever. Just represent us well. Do whatever. And so we have. We've done whatever, and we've had a lot of fun with it.
All right. Well, in light of that, and in light of the fact that you have told fans that if they get stuck, I'm using my air quotations, if they get stuck going to a wedding in the fall on a major college football Saturday to try to ease the pain of that burden, you will give them Quick Trip gas. So let me just tell you, Saturday, September 7th, I have to go to a wedding in Texas on the same day that the Longhorns are playing against Michigan. And here's the kicker. The two people getting married, they both went to UT. And somehow they are picking Saturday, September 7th. Now, here's the thing, Josh. It's family. And I love them. The only solace is that I apparently have earned myself some free gas.
Yeah, sympathy and free gas. Okay, so I'll have our people reach out to your people. There has been brewing for a long time the need for a serious conversation about fall weddings in this country. And I don't mean outlawing them. Like if I were king of the United States, I would not outlaw the fall wedding. But I would really outlaw shaming anyone for not wanting to attend your fall wedding. I think the great misnomer here, the big myth, if you invite me to a wedding in the fall and I say no, a lot of people's tendency would be to throw in my face, oh, so you think your football game's more important than our marriage? And I would say, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the football game's more important than your wedding. A wedding is not a marriage. I'm all for your marriage. But your marriage is not on the line that Saturday. It's just your wedding. It's going to happen with or without me. Texas is not going to go play in Ann Arbor again for 1,000 years. So humbly, here's my gift. I will be MIA for that Saturday.
How do I prove it to you? Do I need a video? Do I need photos? I'm telling you, I'm going to be at a wedding.
here's what I need from you, okay? And with a full tank of gas on the line. I need the saddest clown face possible of you at this wedding. Oh, I need photographic evidence.
Wait, during the ceremony?
Look, you get as bold as you want to. It may be reception.
I might get kicked out of the family, Josh.
Can I please ask you, is getting kicked out of this thing the worst thing that could happen to you, given the circumstances?
Well, the wedding, no, but the family, yes.
Okay, point taken. Okay, so wait for the reception. I will allow it.
All right, okay, phew.
Yeah, I just want all the credit with none of the blame. That's all I'm interested in. Is this an early in the day affair? Because this game kicks off at 11 a.m. Central Time, by
Thankfully,
the way.
Thankfully, it's an afternoon wedding, so I believe the game will be, it should be done by then. Although, here's the problem. If UT ends up losing, which, of course, is a possibility, there might be a lot of people in a bad mood.
Oh, no, I've seen this happen before. First off, this is just foolish, and any bad weddings that happen in the fall, you deserve to have turned bad. But I have been at one. I was at an Auburn wedding one time. Man, something crazy happened, which always does to Auburn, and it was a night wedding, like a 6 p.m. wedding, and the kickoff had been in the early afternoon hours, and I've never experienced anything like it. I've got an ear-to-ear smile on my face because I've been drugged to this thing against my will back before I got smart enough to work on Saturday, so I couldn't go. And I remember everyone was trying to pretend to be happy, but it was an Auburn family, Auburn marrying Auburn, and everyone was just miserable. Oh. And it was like, let's cut the cake and go home and just pass out.
I can't say a whole lot considering that I got married on an NFL Sunday. It wasn't a college football Saturday, but I did get married on a football Sunday, something I thought I would never do. But as you point out, it's one day of your entire life, so still maintain my NFL credibility. I guess there's that. And I'm excited about my gas, too. Gas is expensive these days. That's a great way to rope in the fans. All right, you can find Josh on Twix at JoshPateCFB. Brand new name, same show. It's the Josh Pate College Football Show, and it's on his YouTube channel, and he owns it free and clear now, and it's always good to have you. Thank you so much for a few minutes.
I appreciate it. Godspeed next week.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.